to the speed of sound, the force of gravity multiplies over and over on your body. Skin flaps from your face as you're pinned to the seat, unable to move while one of the world's most advanced fighter jets dances on the edge of physics. Every day, fighter pilots around the world endure forces like these to perform their jobs. But today's guest is no jet jockey. He's a professional sports announcer and an aviation enthusiast that just happened to find himself inside of one of the planet's fastest rides. He joins us now to tell the tale.
Welcome back to the Get Lost Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Still, freelance journalist for outlets around the globe. Today's guest is a legendary man of the microphone. For more than two decades, he's been a play-by-play announcer for the NBA. First, with the Portland Trailblazers, and then with the Memphis Grizzlies. He's an iconic voice to sports fans around the country, a former Tennessee Sports Broadcaster of the Year, and an active member of the Tennessee Shakespeare Company. His name is Pete Pranica, and Pete, it is my honor to welcome you to the show.
Thank you very much, Joe. You throw around some of those adjectives, you know, like iconic and legendary. I mean, it's very flattering. Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to the conversation.
I'm so excited to talk to you because, as listeners know, we're based in Memphis, although we talk about places all over the world. So when I come home, it's really exciting to connect with, like, the voices that I hear and the people that I know, like, just living in the city. And, man, I can't tell you how many nights of my life have been spent yelling at a TV listening to you.
Well, Brevin and I always say, we are guests in your living room. We want to make sure that we are good guests in your living room, and you never want to throw us out. So it's really cool to be recognized around the city and for people to say nice things about us and just to have that communal experience that focuses on the Grizzlies, and that Brevin and I and Rob Fisher were able to deliver that experience from the arena, wherever it might be, whether it's in Memphis or in Brooklyn or in Los Angeles, and hopefully transmit that experience to the listeners and viewers at home.
And you guys are so good at that too. And I feel like on the road is really where you shine the most, because you can put people in those arenas where maybe we don't have the ability to travel, you know?
That is, you know, the one thing that gets guys out of this business is the travel. Mm-hmm. Now, we travel via charter. We stay in five-star hotels. But still, I've seen more hotel lobbies at 2:30 in the morning than most vampires. So, and some guys, like I said, when they leave broadcasting at this level, it's usually because of the travel, and the travel has worn them out, and they're just like, I just don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, it's a hard life. How many days a year are you on the road?
I don't even count, because what I do, Joe, at the beginning of an NBA season is I get the pocket schedules from the Grizzlies, and I just hand them out to people. I was like, here, this is where I'm going to be for the next 6 months. Yeah. So, you know, if you want to ask me to an event or see a concert or see a show or do something, check the schedule first before you ask me. And it's strange because I'm a subscriber to the Memphis Symphony. So I just cross-referenced their schedule with my schedule. So, okay, which concerts can I actually go to? That's kind of my life.
That's amazing, though. And funny you are, my mom was a Memphis Symphony for many years. So, shout out to Susan. I know you don't listen, and you would be horrified if you did, but... Pete, man, I want to talk to you about some of the theater work that you do, because you are a member of the Tennessee Shakespeare Company, and you've got an upcoming Mark Twain performance.
Yes, this is absolutely true. Sunday afternoon, September 18th, 3:00, Mark Twain. It's I'm a board member of Tennessee Shakespeare Company, and how this all came about, we have to go all the way back to my high school years. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was on the debate and speech team, and on the speech team, I was a freshman. There was an upperclassman, and he did the Mark Twain story, His Grandfather's Old Ram, which is this hilarious story that meanders all over everywhere. And we know how sometimes, not throwing any shade at older people, but sometimes their stories kind of meander. And that's exactly what this is. And this upperclassman did a spot on Hal Holbrook as Mark Twain voice. And I thought, man, that is so cool. And then I tried it, and I found that I could do it too. And I did in speech competitions. I didn't do His Grandfather's Old Rant, but I did a piece called Encounter with an Interviewer. Because Mark Twain, early in his career, he would go out, he would give readings from his works, and he said the worst thing in his world was the local interviewer who would ask him all these questions, and he hated it. And so in this story, he confuses the inquisitor. Why? Because his answers are all nonsensical.
I feel so offended by that as a journalist. And I also feel like the modern day equivalent is bands. You cover a rock concert, their whole goal in life is just to like work with whatever you're trying to do for your job.
Right, right. Well, and you know, if I had written a best-selling novel or I was a famous actor and you're doing, you know, what at ESPN they call the car wash, where you like do an interview with, you know, 20 people, or if you were on a book tour and you're asked the same question over and over again, I imagine it would get kind of tedious. In any event, so I did that piece, did very well with it in high school. And I had this idea that I was going to create my own one-man show like Hal Holbrook, and I was going to fund my college education with this. And of course, that never happened. But I started going to productions of Tennessee Shakespeare Company very early in their history. This is the 15th performance season. I may have been in the first performance season for all I know.
Wow.
I go back that far. And I had gone to the productions, and I'd gotten to know Dan McCleary, who is the founding and the executive producer of the company, and had become good friends, and I donated to the company. And one day I was just feeling a little goofy, and I said, I called Dan up and I said, look, I've got this really, really crazy idea. I have this bucket list item. I want to do Mark Twain, but I want to, because in high school you didn't do it in costume.
Yeah.
Okay. So I said, no, I want to do Mark Twain in costume like Hal Holbrook. The one thing that I'm telling you is I want to do this, but do not pay me. Whatever you make from the proceeds from the performance, you keep that. That's for your educational program, for whatever you need to do. Okay. It's just a vanity project for me. I'm not doing it for the money.
Just, I want to dress up like Mark Twain. It's not that weird. Trust me. And I'm really good at it, by the way. I don't do this at all.
And so they were in the process of starting what they call their literary salons. And so he said, okay, you know, get 20 to 30 minutes and perform for me, and then we'll see if this is something you want to do. And so I put together a couple of stories, including His Grandfather's Ram. And he said, yeah, this is great. This is going to work. And in those days, the salons were done in the homes of some of the board members. So Milton Schaefer donated his living room. And so here I am in wig and white suit and mustache, and I'm doing Mark Twain in Milton Schaefer's living room, and there are probably like 50 people, standing room only, in his living room. And it was pretty well received. And, you know, I continued to support Tennessee Shakespeare Company. Dan invited me to be on the board. And every once in a while, either he or I or somebody in the company would say, is Mark Twain ever going to return? And I said, hey, you know, anytime you say the word, I'm up for
it's
it.
It's like a legendary Memphis party guy now. Created.
Yeah, exactly. And so when Dan was putting together this performance season, he said to me, he said, would you be willing to do Mark Twain again, but as a larger performance, not 20 minutes, but this would be a full standalone performance? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, he gave me a timeline, and I sat down and I went through Hal Holbrook's book. I went through audio recordings of Hal Holbrook doing Mark Twain. I, you know, did some research as far as different stories, different vignettes, different quotes I wanted to put in.
Sure.
and put together about a 60 to 70 minute script. And so we're going to go into rehearsals the day after Labor Day. And it's going to be me on stage with a chair, a lectern, and that's it.
Are you going to get Brevin and Rob to show up?
They know about it. Whether or not they're there, I don't know. As of as of the latest reporting, I think we're about 70% sold out. So
wow. So September 18th, if you're in Memphis, and Memphis is still like our largest base of listeners, so I know you guys are out there. Pete, I'm so glad you came in today. And if you guys want to visualize, we're back in the South Main Sound studio where the show began and sat here 3 years ago, maybe, with Gary Parrish in this same basement. It's hot. It's creaky. It's really embarrassing considering you and some of the best studios in the world. But
you haven't seen some of the hallways that we do interviews in. We just dress it up.
Must be. But anyway, we want to thank South Main Sounds for letting me pop in here and record. But I want to talk to you today, Pete, because it is the Get Lost podcast, and we like to take people on journeys of the mind and take them out of their comfort zone. And I can't think of a less comfortable place than in the backseat of a fighter jet. How did you end up there?
I've been a lifelong aviation guy. I mean, I built the model planes and everything when I was a kid, and I had always wanted to fly, whether it was the Blue Angels or the Thunderbirds. And I knew that the Thunderbirds were coming to Memphis, and I forget, 6-7 years ago, I think it was. And I really wanted to get a ride, but because they do what they call VIP flights.
Sure.
And I wanted to get one of those, and I wasn't sure exactly how to do it. But one of my counterparts in Portland had actually flown with the Blue Angels. And I said, Mike, how did you get the ride with the Blue Angels? And he said, well, you talk to the PR person for the air show, and then they contact the Navy or the Air Force, and, you know, it just kind of goes on from there.
Before we get back to the show, I want to take just a few seconds to tell you about a place I recently had the chance to get lost at in person. Tortola. Jungle hikes lined with banana trees, a strange man at a mountaintop restaurant, and one of the best surf schools in the Caribbean could all be found there. It's the kind of place where you really need to spend more than just a few days hitting the most popular beaches on Instagram. Instead, I recommend setting up shop for a while with our newest show sponsor, Seascape Villas. Now, let's be clear, I happened upon this place by chance, and I really did stay there. In the Caribbean, reliable Wi-Fi and a quiet place to work from home can sometimes be hard to come by. And in peak season, rental cars can also be really difficult to find. But when I hopped off of the ferry from St. Thomas on Tortola's West End, Seascape Villas had an SUV ready for me at the dock. The condo itself made the perfect base, not only to explore Tortola from, but also to keep up with writing assignments and conference calls from as well. Sunset views couldn't be beat, and the entire place was affordable enough for a travel writer on a budget to splurge for a couple of nights. A fully equipped kitchen made cooking meals easy. Meanwhile, I was able to get some incredible R&R while island hopping across the Caribbean on assignment. So check out Seascape Villas on Airbnb or VRBO, or book directly at seascapevillasbvi.com. Tell them the Get Lost podcast sent you, and they just might hook you up.
Okay. So I did that. And they said, okay, well, this is a contact person with the Air Force. And the Air Force now sends you a million forms. You have to measure yourself because, I mean, I'm like 5'8". Of course, I'm going to fit in a fighter jet. But there could be, you know, a basketball player who's 6'7". Like, I don't think he's going to fit. So
you don't get to go.
You don't get to go. So
sorry, Jaren Jackson.
Right. He's not going to fit in an F-16. So there was that. There was also the legalese that, you know, you're not going to hold the Air Force responsible if you end up as a smoking hole in Millington, Tennessee. And you know, so you go all through all this stuff. And the theory is they're doing this so that you can then provide them with positive publicity about the Air Force.
Right. Okay. So it's a press trip. And for our international listeners, the Blue Angels and Thunderbirds are these like flight demonstration teams that use pretty much the same fighter jets as the Air Force and the Navy. That, I mean, they're wartime, high-performance, crazy airplanes.
Right. Now, the Blue Angels use the F-18. They've just transitioned to the Super Hornet. And the Thunderbirds have been using F-16s for a long, long, long time. And there are a total of 8. The first 6 are actually performers. The first Thunderbirds 1-4 typically fly in the Diamond Formation. Thunderbirds 5 and 6 fly solo, and they typically oppose each other. So they may come from opposite ends of the airstrip, and they're, you know, tearing at each other, you know, 500 miles an hour, and you know, then they peel away,
and they look like they're gonna collide.
They do look like they're going to collide. Yes, it's quite something. And so eventually they said, okay, fine, you get one of the rides. And it was a Friday afternoon that we were supposed to go, but there was some issue with refueling one of the planes, and it wasn't there in time. And they said, look, you're here at the airfield, so we're going to do all the pre-flight stuff now. You'll fly Saturday morning.
Okay.
So the pre-flight stuff, basically you meet with the public affairs officer, and it was Sarah Harper, Captain Sarah Harper, and she said, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. This is why we're allowing you to do this. This is what we would like for you to do. And, of course, being with the Grizzlies, and because we have a television production facility, there was going to be somebody from the Grizzlies who's going to be shooting this. I agreed to write an article for Grizzlies.com and get this out on social media that, hey, come to the Millington Air Show because the Thunderbirds are going to be there, and I'm going to have this great experience. I'm going to share it all with you. And so, you know, so that was good. And then they bring in the flight surgeon.
What's a flight surgeon?
That is their personal doctor who makes sure that they are fit to fly. Because when you are flying in one of these planes, you will pull some significant G-forces. In fact, there's one particular maneuver, and we'll talk about that as we get a little further on. There's one maneuver where you pull at least 9 Gs.
Is that enough to make you black out?
Could be.
Okay.
Which is why you visit with the flight surgeon.
Okay.
Okay. So, and just for reference, for those of you who have watched Top Gun Maverick, the training scene where he flies into the canyon, you know, blows up the target and then goes vertical, you look at the Mach meter and it goes to like 9.2, 9.3.
So you're pretty much doing what, like, the basis of the movie, a big plot point was, like, people, this limit.
Pretty much.
And you're right at the limit of human tolerance.
Right. So this is why you visit with the flight surgeon, so he tells you how to survive this.
Luckily, as a trained NBA play-by-play guy, you're prepared for this.
Yeah, this is not natural to most of us. First of all, you do wear a G-suit, okay? The thing with high G-forces is that it forces blood away from places where you need blood, i.e. your head. And so what the G-suit does is make sure there are bladders that inflate at various parts of your body so that blood does not pool in your legs, doesn't pool in your head, doesn't pool anywhere it's not supposed to, so that you can maintain consciousness. Because obviously if blood rushes out of your head, you are going to black out.
I mean, you just will physically, that's it.
Exactly. So, but the flight suit, the G-suit, will help you to about 6 Gs.
Okay.
But we're going to do 9.
Right, that's 3 more.
Exactly. So you learn how to be very, very fastidious. And, of course, your pilot up in front is going to tell you when you're going to go into these maneuvers, you are clenching your butt, you're clenching your abdomen, you're clenching your thighs to make sure that blood doesn't rush somewhere where it's not supposed to. And then also the bladders will inflate to help you in that. But the other thing that you have to do, and you are wearing an oxygen mask, you're breathing 100% oxygen,
Oh wow! So you're kind of like high up there.
Yes. Okay. But the flight surgeon says, okay, here's how you breathe. Because if you're pulling 9 Gs or even 4 or 5 Gs, the effort to pull air into your lungs and then to expel the carbon dioxide is, you're not going to be able to do it because your body is under such stress. So they teach you this breathing technique, and this will be very interesting because in audio, but you do something like, so just a little bit out, a little bit in, and you're doing it basically with your throat.
Wow.
Because your diaphragm is going to be so compressed that you're not going to be able to breathe normally. And that's how you make sure that you get a little bit of oxygen when you go through these particular maneuvers.
Wow. And
so the flight surgeon is telling you, you know, when you get to this part, you need to breathe like this. This is how you, you know, stay conscious.
How far in advance do they tell you? Where you just show up and they're like, hey, here's a list of things you should know to not die.
Well, this was shared with me, like I said, the afternoon before.
Oh, good. Okay.
But I've been a spaceflight junkie forever. And so, you know, around aviation. So I had some sense of what this was all about. And you only hear about pilots blacking out and things like this. And if you go on YouTube, I think there's one of a famous football player who went up with the Blue Angels. And he gets knocked out because he's not doing what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, that went viral like a couple of years ago.
Exactly.
Big name guy.
Yeah. So you do that. So you meet with the flight surgeon. Flight surgeon tells you, okay, you're going to fly tomorrow morning. Okay, what's a good breakfast to have? Something very plain, something very bland. Okay. You know, no breakfast burritos for you. So, you know.
Never do that.
No, not when you're going to try to pull 9 G's. And so something very simple like bagel, cream cheese, just take it easy. Don't go wild with your food because, you know, you're going to be doing some stuff that might upset your stomach anyway.
Right.
So you visit with the flight surgeon, then you visit with the quartermaster, and the quartermaster is essentially the person who is responsible for your gear. Okay, so let's get the boots the right size. Let's get the flight suit the right size. We'll show you how to get into a flight suit. Make sure that the helmet is the proper size. How do you put the helmet on? How do you adjust the helmet? How do you put the oxygen mask on? So all these logistical things, and you're going through this, and it's like your mind is spinning.
Yeah. Because you're also trying to process the fact that pretty soon you're going to need all this information, and if you mess up,
exactly. Now they've got a crew to help you, but you know, there's something about this is like I'm doing this. I want to look cool. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to look like a dweeb that I can't, you know, fasten my own oxygen mask or whatever. And then finally, I flew with the advanced pilot and the show narrator, who flew Thunderbird number 8, which happens to have a back seat. Not all of them have back seats, but Thunderbird 8 does. And this is the plane that they use for the demo rides. And he sits down and he says, okay, and he's got the F-16 model on a stick. And he's like, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. And he's got like a video on an iPad that he's showing you. It's like, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And essentially the theory is we will fly what the solo pilots will fly during the show.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're about to earn some street cred, but also that's a terrifying thing.
Terrifying for you, but I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be fantastic. So and what they tell you is, number one, this is what we're going to fly. These are the maneuvers. This is the order in which we're going to fly. You don't need to remember them. I will call them out to you. There will be no surprises. He'll say, you know, I'm going to do an aileron roll, which is basically, you know, rolling around the long axis of the plane, you know, 360 degrees upside down and all that.
It's fine.
It's fine. It's no big deal. Yeah, flying
did
upside down.
Did they give you a pole camera?
They do not, but they do have two cameras pointed at you. So I do have a video record of the entire flight and my reaction pointing back at
me. So they're telling you what you're going to do. You're geared up and you look like, in your mind, you're Maverick. Maybe you look like a little less Tom Cruise.
Well, the funny thing too is, and God bless the Air Force because they've got videographers and photographers, and they take care of every detail down to they call it the Tom Cruise shot because what they do is they put a sticker with your name on the canopy.
Stop! I got to do this.
it's one of my all time favorite photos. And so you're on top of the ladder, you got the helmet in your hand, you're looking over your shoulder. And there it says on the canopy, Pete Franica.
Stop.
And I'm getting into an F-16. Like, this is really incredibly cool.
Did the Grizzlies let you put that on your business card?
No, Deb. Yeah, that would be. Anyway, so Major Scott Petz, want to give him his props. Wonderful guy. He was the pilot that day. And he says, look, here's everybody's worried about a couple of things. If you get really, really uncomfortable, like, okay, I didn't realize I don't want to fly upside down, you know, or I don't want to do these things. He said, just say Southwest mode. And he'll say, I'll fly straight and level for an hour and we'll just sightsee. If you get to a point where it's like, look, I don't want to go upside down. I don't want to climb. I don't want to loop. I don't want to do anything. I just want to enjoy flying in an F-16 in the backseat.
I don't think that's the way you want to do it.
No, absolutely not. And the other thing too is because a lot of people would be very concerned about this is getting sick.
I want to talk to you guys for a quick second about my hometown, Memphis, Tennessee. You guys know that Memphis is a place surrounded by soul. It's where the blues became rock and roll, it's where soul music found its groove, and hip-hop turned trap beats into sounds that still top the charts today. I love spending time in Memphis, walking its streets, and feeling the energy from decades of recordings rising up from the sidewalk. a real thing. When I'm looking for a place to pick up artwork, gifts, or flavors that remind me of home, I always swing by Feelin' Memphis. It's right there, downtown, on South Main Street. Feelin' Memphis is run by my good friend, Tawanda Pirtle, who grew up with me way back when I was just a college dropout designing t-shirts for her chicken joint, Jack Pirtle's Chicken. Tawanda has always been there for me as my career morphed into the world of travel writing and podcasting, and you can usually find her there for you behind the counter at Feelin' Memphis. So next time you're strolling through downtown, look for the big blue trolley in the window. Tell Tawanda I said hello. While you're in there, scope out some funky, hand-curated gift items to share the energy of Memphis with someone you love. That's Feelin' Memphis at 509 South Main Street. Tell them the Get Lost podcast sent you. Now, back to the show.
So the flight suit has pockets everywhere, including like by your calf. And so they will give you a couple of barf bags and you stash them, you know, in your leg. And what they call it puke and rally.
All right.
So
I learned this in college.
Different circumstances, probably too much beer, but so if you feel sick, okay, we've learned how to take the oxygen mask off, grab the bag, do whatever you need to do, roll the top of the bag up, put it back in your pant pocket, put the mask back on, and we continue to go.
I love it. That's exactly what we did. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's Silky O'Sullivan. You can bet on it.
And I just had it as my goal. I was not going to lose my lunch. Or breakfast in this case. There was no way I was going to. That was my goal. My goal was do the entire profile, mm-hmm. pull 9 G's, and not have to puke and rally. I don't know if they gave me the numbers on what percentage of people would lose a portion of their last meal going through all this. But we went through the entire profile, and it starts that, you know, you roll down the runway and you take off, and then you go immediately vertical,
like that,
just like that. Oh, hey, we're gonna put the afterburners on, and now we're going really fast.
Well, what does that feel like?
You're being pushed back in your seat, and you look up, and all you can see is blue sky. You really can't see behind you, of course, but you've just gone straight up in the air. And then he starts the performance, and it's like, okay, well, we're gonna do, you know, a 4-point roll. So we're going to roll from level to 90 degrees to 180 degrees, 270, 360. You keep rolling around. And so we went through all this. And then, of course, the 9G maneuver, which starts as a dive. And again, it's very, I was just happened to be watching on YouTube one of the clips of Top Gun Maverick. And that's exactly, you dive down, and then all of a sudden you pull sharply up, and that's how you pull 9 G's.
Yeah, it's exactly what they have to do.
Exactly. And so that's what we did. And it ended up being 9.2 G's. Now, to give everybody a frame of reference, 9.2 G's, you do the math without giving away my body weight, it's like having a half-ton pickup truck on your chest.
For how long?
Blessedly, not too terribly long. Because they're not trying to make it, you know, incredibly uncomfortable, but this is part of the show. This is what they have to do.
Yeah.
It may have been, for all I can remember, it may have been 30 seconds. I'd actually have to look at the video.
And what does that feel like if you have this gigantic weight on you as you're pulling up and, like, going through literally rocketing through
mm-hmm,
the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got this huge weight on you. Pin your seat. Can you even utilize that breathing training?
You have to, because if you quit breathing, you're going to black out. So you go into this, and as I said, you know, Major Petz is like, okay, we're going to do this maneuver now.
Yeah.
Okay, you ready? You understand what you need to do? You understand your breathing technique? Yes, sir, I do. My call sign was Grizz, by the way. It's like, Grizz, do you understand? They're like, yes, I do. So, yes, I mean, you, and at this time, I was in the midst of training to get my private pilot's license. So there's a whole thing about situational awareness and, okay, at this point I need to do this. And so it helped me understand as we go into this maneuver, this is what I need to do.
Are the physics the same? It's just in a private license most likely like a single engine Cessna or something.
Right, you're flying straight and level a lot.
Yeah, but the principles of flight probably don't change too much. It's just that your craft is that much.
And supersonic.
Minor detail.
Yeah, minor detail. So we went through and we did it, and it does feel like the proverbial elephant is sitting on your chest. And you're just like, there's a combination of survival mode kicks in, the limited training that you had kicks in, and a whole lot of admiration, because this is everything that the Thunderbirds or Blue Angels do in performance, they're maneuvers that they would use in combat.
I didn't realize that. I thought it was like sort of a show.
No, this is not showboating. This is actual, and I think, because I was just at the Millington Air Show this summer, and I seem to remember that the Blue Angels narrator said, hey, this isn't showing off. These are maneuvers that are actually used in dogfighting.
That is wild. So you now have a perspective of what it's like to be in probably one of the most extreme situations of human physics.
Yeah, and when you see Tom Cruise in that segment of Top Gun Maverick where he's hitting 9 G's,
yeah,
and you see the reaction on his face, that's pretty, it's absolutely realistic. It's absolute. That's exactly how you look and how you feel and how you're fighting for breath. And I guess our G meter topped out at 9.2. And so when we finally landed, Scott Pett says, Major Pett says to me, says, well, how did it feel? Man, that was so cool in the 9 G's. Like, no. It was 9.2 G's. Never, ever short sell yourself on how many G's you pulled. It was 9.2. Make sure that when you tell the story, it's 9.2. But we had pulled the 9.2G maneuver, and we had time left because you get an hour in it. And I said, okay, you are a combat pilot. Show me how you want to track down a MiG. Pretend there's a MiG out there and do whatever maneuvers you need to do.
Yeah.
And so we did a little bit of that as well. You know, just kind of dogfighting and just to get an appreciation of what they have to put themselves through.
How different is that?
I don't think that there was really any difference. It's just that the show, it's carefully choreographed. We do this, we do this, we do this, we do this. And, you know, he was trying to react to an imaginary opponent. And,
yeah.
And you know, kind of like, well, this is the type of turn we're going to need. And so back there, Grizz, be prepared to breathe the way you need to breathe. Make sure that you're clenching your butt and your thighs so, you know, blood doesn't rush to a place it doesn't need to go. And so you were on constant alert that you were like really, really on top of it to make sure that, you know, you didn't black out, or you didn't get tunnel vision, or your vision didn't gray or anything like that. So it was great fun. You get to the end of it. And as cool as I looked getting into the plane, getting out of the plane, because after an hour of this, and there's not a whole lot of straight level flight. I mean, this is constant maneuver after maneuver after maneuver after maneuver. And you're like hanging on for dear life.
So every minute is 10, 20.
Yeah. I mean, it really, and you get to the end and go like, on one hand, I want it to end because I feel like I've been beat up. But on the other hand, you don't want it to end because it's the coolest experience that you could ever have, particularly if you're an aviation guy like me. And, but yeah, in order to get out and, you know, I try to be a polite person. You never put your feet on the furniture. Like, well, no, the only way to climb out of an F-16 is to put your foot on the seat and then climb over the sill. But I was so tired and like so beat up from all this that my dismount from the F-16 wasn't exactly the most graceful in the world. And you climb down the ladder, and then they do, like I said, they do an amazing job because, you know, Major Pets comes out, their photographers come out, the crew comes out to congratulate you,
yeah,
you know, that you completed this flight. And I have a very, very nice framed photo, not of that event, but a framed photo of the Thunderbirds signed by the entire crew.
Cool.
And they were just fantastic. And tremendous admiration for what they do, because it is physically very, very demanding.
Everyone knows what they say about fish stories, but this one is true. A while back, I was mountain biking along the Arkansas River near a place called the Big Dam Bridge. In the distance, I could see the afternoon sun falling over Little Rock's lone round peak. Beside me, I saw a tranquil, rippling pool next to an old railroad bridge, secluded from the rapid river's flow. It was exactly the kind of spot that I'd biked there for. So I hopped off the bike, reached into a backpack, and pulled out a fishing rod. Then I spent the rest of the afternoon watching time slowly roll by in the warm afternoon sun. I even caught a few fish right there in that spot, with my bike laying on the ground and the shallow sand beneath my feet. This is the kind of fishing story that doesn't have a big catch or a record bass attached to it. It's just a peaceful afternoon by the water, the kind that helps you unwind from all of the problems in life. If you listen to this podcast, chances are you've got a nose for adventure yourself. And if that nose leads you to the water, I suggest picking up a tool that can help you enjoy more moments like these. When I travel, I often pack a fishing rod. And though many portable options abound, I like the rods from Wisconsin's St. Croix rods the best. St. Croix's Avid Trek and Triumph travel rods break down into a case that fits in a backpack, or an overhead bin, or behind just about any car seat. They're designed in the USA and made with care from a family-run company that knows some fishing stories don't require any exaggeration. Sometimes just being on the water is enough. You can learn more about St. Croix's travel rods at stcroixrods.com, and you can tell them the Get Lost podcast sent you. Now, back to the show.
Now, so do the pilots that fly in the Thunderbird, they then rotate in and out and go back into combat
right.
squadron?
Yeah. I think, I want to say that the term for those pilots with a demonstration squadron, I think it's like maybe 2 years in, and then they go back out. And and there's everything from, you know, the six show pilots to the advanced pilot narrator. They have an executive officer, the flight surgeon, there's a public affairs officer. And then it's not only the pilots, but if you are a crew member, say you're enlisted in the Air Force,
yeah,
you can apply to be on the crew. And they have a tremendous support system to make sure those planes,
cool.
Yeah, to make sure that these planes are ready to roll and everything. They're perfectly polished and they work perfectly. And even the getting into the plane with them, it's a ceremony. It's a military ceremony. They are standing at attention and they salute you as you get into the plane. And, you know, they really take good care of you. I'm just so impressed with Thunderbirds and the Air Force and the way that they handled their business. It was a tremendous experience on so many levels. When you sit down and you think of all the really cool things that you've been able to do, and I've been ridiculously blessed, Joe, with having a career that I wanted since I was a little kid, that F-16 experience is up there with anything, because so few people do it. The fact that I was able to enjoy it, revel in it, not throw up, you know, and pull 9.2 Gs and just really, really enjoy it because I am an aviation guy. It probably, if you're asking me, is there another experience in your life that was better than that? I can't think of one.
Wow. That says a lot. Let Pete Pranica, play-by-play voice of the Memphis Grizzlies, follow him on Twitter at Pete Pranica. And I can't thank you enough for coming into this humble South Main Sound studio with me.
That was a great conversation. Thanks for having me, Joe.
Wow.
The Get Lost Podcast is a production of Sold Outside Exploration Company. Follow us on Instagram at GetLostPod. Visit the website GetLostPod.com. And as always, be sure to leave a review and help spread the word.